The world outside your window is, it's full of smoke. It's the void. Oh my god, there's a smoke monster. Oh my god, it's terrible. But you know what? I gotta be honest. It's kind of low-key awesome. Everything is super. It's the podcast we're talking about. Loki Season 1, Episode 5, Journey into Mystery. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm not supposed to be here. I was going to take this week off, but the episode was too crazy and wild and ridiculous that I had to show up. Also, recording a little bit earlier than usual. I was like, oh, I can make that. Anyway, hey, it's me, joined here by Kevin, Classic Kevin.
That's right. Avoid the void. Whatever. Oh my God, who caught that reference? Jesus Christ, what am I, 50?
Avoid the void. What is it?
To avoid the Noid was like an old Domino's, was it? Like mascot?
A Domino's
What's
mascot?
What's wrong with me? What am I doing right now?
I don't know, Kevin. I'm hungry for pizza.
Pizza was in this episode.
Yeah,
Josh.
There's a little pizza van car,
at the very least. Yeah.
Pizza van, unbelievable. Kevin, we are not alone. Don't be scared. Don't be panicked. But we do have a crocodile version of Mike Bloom in the house. Yeah, Crocodile Mike. Okay. I thought that at first you were just doing like what a crocodile sounds like.
It goes, yeah, you know the classic crocodile sound of mm-hmm. No, Kevin, you were right on the money. The Noid was a mascot,
yes,
from Domino's. He would make your pizza cold. And so they said that Domino's always avoids the Noid.
Wow.
And I do believe they brought the Noid back as of late because, you know, these times definitely need that right now. Surely the Noid needs to make his return.
Everything needs to be rebooted, Mike. That's the standard now.
Including the Noid. But yeah, should we count this? I know obviously the Pizza Planet truck has shown up in basically every Pixar film. Does this count?
Loki's
the Pizza Planet truck?
This is like the hot take, right? Loki is a Pixar movie.
Yeah,
like,
Loki is Pixar confirmed.
Yeah, Loki
this
is a Pixar
this
movie.
This was very clearly moments before WALL-E, right? This is how WALL-E starts.
Well, yes. I mean,
this
I don't know.
This is the prologue.
Well, I think about it, though. Luca plus WALL-E equals Loki. It was right there in front of us.
It's not quite. There's a
this
couple
like
of things that aren't quite
riddle
working.
Moment.
Yeah, I am Lord Loki. I want to also apologize. I said crocodile Loki. It is alligator Loki,
Loki.
Officially. Oh. Yeah, making mistakes left and right here, but Mike, we're thrilled to have you. How have you been?
I've been doing well. I mean, things are good.
Things are good?
Things from an MCU perspective are super interesting, too.
I mean, you're not eating a snake right now, so that's a plus.
I'm not eating a snake. I was going to come in here and be like, if Kang doesn't show up in the finale, I will eat Miss Minutes. I will gobble her down number by number. No, it's been a while since I've thought about making ridiculous bets on podcasts. I have learned my lesson, but
no, you haven't. Come on.
No, I haven't. I really haven't.
Let's
I'm
be honest.
None of us learn lessons. That's not what we're here for.
No.
Yeah, that's Loki's not here about learning lessons, right? Like, we learn more about ourselves, but are we really getting a moral at the end of the day? And that's, you know, actually segueing into like the overall show that sort of has been my unique approach to all this. I know that I wrote into you guys before the season saying, how do we think this 6-week break, how is this going to treat the show? Because I know that personally, you know, it felt a little bit like jumping back in the pool after you had been in for a while of like, okay, now my body has to get adjusted to the temperature again. Not to mention, I'm also at a time of the year where there's a lot more stuff going on in my life, as we'll talk about the plugs later on, than the first two shows. So admittedly, you know, it's been a little bit of a tougher experience for me than I thought getting into Loki, but I am so grateful that I got to come in during this time, bar none my favorite episode of the series.
100%. This is my favorite episode of the season. Like, it's not even a question.
I think it's a contender for, like, one of the best episodes of the Marvel shows. You know, full stop. It's, like, chock full of stuff. Like, it is a very stuff-heavy episode. And it's also, like, got great character beats as well. It looks incredible.
Like crazy.
Many, many Easter eggs. Just, like, tons of things that's, like, worth poring over each and every detail. A really fun one. Even the title, Journey into Mystery, just, like...
the reference! That's the comic that the Thors show up in. That's where it begins!
So, like, it's really fun. It's a really fun, encapsulation of a lot of the things that people have either been enjoying about Loki, or maybe in some cases have wanted from Loki but hadn't gotten
this
yet.
This guy right here.
Looking at Kevin, he's talking about himself too. So really excited to get into it. We shall do that. A couple of business items up front before we go in, and then we will really get into it. Want to remind everybody, I'm sure that this is not news to anybody, because if you're listening to a Loki podcast, then you're a big Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, most likely. So you know that Black Widow is coming out July 9th. It's this Friday. We are going to be combining our Loki finale recap with our Black Widow recap. That's going to come your way next week after the Loki finale. So if you're looking for Black Widow coverage from the Everything is Super podcast, that's how you're going to get it, at least initially. I think the game plan is we will do that like combo platter podcast next week, and we will do Loki feedback plus additional Black Widow pickups the week after. So you'll get like two more weeks of Loki and Black Widow past this point. So if you watch the movie, if you got feedback for us, send it in addition to your Loki finale takes once the finale rolls around. Super at postshowrecaps.com. You're going to want to get that in. I think you're going to want to get that in on July 14th during the day, which is the day that the Loki finale drops. Kevin and I are going to record our recap later that evening. So it's a pretty tight turnaround. That's a good excuse to have that Loki feedback show spot the week after, so we can pick up anything that we miss that you guys send in on the later side. So that's some news right up front. We just want to remind you of all of that. Before we push in any deeper, we'll just take a quick second to thank our sponsors for this episode of Post Show Recaps, our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. Kevin, I sure hope that the pizza delivery car had Geico attached to it.
Yeah, that's what you know, you can save 50% on your pizza order as well.
Delicious. I don't know. Does it cover smoke damage?
I'm not sure. Smoke monster damage. Yeah. So, Kevin, do you feel attacked? Because
so
you have the hosts of Lost Down the Hatch.
What is
Lost
that? I've never heard of it.
Rewatch pod that I believe a Lost Rewatch podcast, prominent show on the Post Show Recaps podcast network, where we go back and we watch every episode of Lost. It's Mike and me, and we're here, and this is an episode in which we go down a hatch and there's a smoke monster, very evocative of Lost. Kevin's not favorite show. I can't even pretend.
No, not my favorite show at all. But yeah, the references were obvious. Hilariously, as pointed out, I'm usually the one who brings up Lost on this podcast. But this one, there was zero chance that Lost wasn't going to come up by virtue of actions. You know, it's really funny, too. Like, smoke monsters, Lost aside, smoke monsters are such a thing in comic book movies and are usually just like hated and derided because it's just like you turn every high concept like Galactus, you know, or Parallax into just a smoke monster. In this particular case, this is an actual smoke monster of a sort from the comics, so at least it didn't go super far off, so it was far more acceptable in my opinion.
Eliath.
Yes.
Eliath. The Goliath. Eliath. Gigantic trans-temporal cloud entity.
Basically, does have a connection to a certain character in the comics that people are predicting might show up.
We'll talk about that for sure. I believe you are referring to, I was going to say something cheeky. Yeah, I was going to say something cheeky.
imagine if they get to this castle and it's Reed Richards.
It's Mephisto.
Being like, hello, everybody. Please, let me get the door. And he extends his arm and opens the door for them.
It's Mephisto. So let's give the broad strokes overview of this wild episode of Loki. We find out where we are. It's the void. Loki is there with other loci, including classic Loki, boastful Loki, kid Loki, alligator Loki. It is patrolled, this place, not by a mole, but by Eliath, this gigantic, crazy cloud monster that you cannot outrun, but it is a living being. This is apparently the place that you go after you've been pruned. This is like the end of time, basically, but what lies beyond the end of time is the big question at the heart of this episode, as Sylvie herself is going to get herself pruned. She's going to prune herself in order to come to this place. She's going to link up with Mobius. They're going to link up with the Loki, or at least some of them, because boastful Loki is a traitor, and President Loki is involved, and he's a monster, and there's so amazing. Many different Lokis that show up in that one scene.
Made me so happy.
They're all going to team up, and they're going to have some sacrifices along the way in order for Sylvie to do her enchantress thing on Eliath, and we will end the episode with basically the follow the yellow brick road moment. They're at Emerald City.
Where
what lies?
Off to be- see the timekeepers.
Yeah, who is the timekeeper? What lies beyond the void? This is like where we are left off at the end of this episode. So that's like the very nuts and bolts synopsis of what happened. But Kevin, like, that just doesn't speak to like what we witnessed. It doesn't even really come close to capturing that.
No, I mean, that was a pretty straightforward, coherent description of this episode, which was complete insanity. And I loved it. I mean, this is, you know, we said at the beginning here, this is what I really hoped the show was. This, that like insane moment when he opens the hatch and there's just a bunch of other Loki, including President Loki, ripped right out from the comics, basically. You know, and then Loki is like, both the Loki had betrayed them, and then everyone betrays President Loki. And
yeah.
Our Loki is there watching this happen and just shaking his head, just completely like aggravated and annoyed at himself betraying each other constantly. And there's a giant Loki fight. Like, this is the absurd crap that I was here for. This is what I want. It was so wild and fun, and I loved every minute of that stuff. But there's also so much great story elements in here, too, which is what I also appreciate. The little things that came through. The idea of Kid Loki was pruned because he killed Thor. The idea of this boastful Loki who's talking about stuff that actually didn't even happen. We had Throg Thor show up for a hot minute. Throg showed up.
Throg confirmed.
That's crazy.
He's in a jar just hanging out in that bunker.
Very easy to miss. Yeah, there's the shot of when we go into the down the hatch and we see like the exterior of the bunker, and we like go into the soil, and there's like I think you see Mjolnir.
Next to it is this like a glass jar. And inside is like a little form like hopping. And I had to back it up to be like, oh my God, like, because I saw it. I was like, what was that? And it was Frog Thor, who is
Throg.
From the comics.
Yeah.
Throg.
Yeah.
So are we to assume, is Throg from the same universe as Loki Gator? Do we think? Because I believe in that section of the Thor comics, when he gets turned into a frog, doesn't he, like, there's obviously the thing with the frogs and the rats, but I believe he also recruits the alligators to his cause, so I could assume that there's some sort of reptilian amphibious universe that both of them would be from there.
It's quite possible. I mean, technically, it really depends on, like, where we're going here, because the Throg is from our main MCU, which was just our Thor turned into a frog by Loki briefly. And then he became normal again.
Right.
But then
and
there's
I think
these
Loki
parallel
even,
worlds where it happens.
Loki even, I think, references that, I believe, in Ragnarok. I think he says, like, sorry for turning you into a frog. So I think,
yes,
technically,
I believe that
Throg
happened.
Was actually a thing that happened off screen in the MCU.
Yeah, but, like, clearly Throg jumped in the wrong direction because he got pruned.
It's so great. Yeah, how did he get there? Why is he in the jar? Did Alligator Loki bring him with himself to the void? So many questions. Yeah, it's a really magic hour of TV. I was up really early. I'm so tired right now. I was up at 3:30 and I watched it and I was like, I'm not going back to sleep after that. I'm buzzing. I was so excited. I was doing a thing that I haven't done since like I stopped like covering this stuff as a reporter. Like I actually started like Googling. I was like, give me your Easter egg articles. I want to read. What did I miss?
Hi,
what was
so many?
Yeah, what's this Thanos copter?
There's the Thanos copter is in.
What is that?
Yo, Thanos straight up has
a helicopter.
He's
Thanos. Why does Thanos need a helicopter?
Why does the Flash need a motorcycle? There's so many things.
Why does the Flash have a motorcycle?
To kill the planet. That's why.
Yeah, wow. The Flash hates the planet.
Oh my God.
This was incredible. This
it
was
really was
so much fun. And I think it also, I think, for me, comes into this idea of expectations. And this is actually where President Loki comes into things. I personally came into Loki thinking it was going to be the MCU Legends of Tomorrow.
I wanted, honestly.
Yeah, where like, okay, because I think between like the trailers really highlighted Loki as D.B. Cooper and President Loki. And we thought, okay, so this is going to be a universe where he's constantly hopping between timelines. Maybe he's chasing Sylvie down. Maybe he's just causing crap to happen. And I think, obviously, that was a misnomer for many reasons. I love the way that, President Loki was used here, albeit briefly. A little disappointed that it wasn't used in the way that we thought. I would encourage people to read Vote Loki, which is sort of like the comic that it's based off of.
What is that? Because I haven't read it. I know it's a thing. Is it as simple as Loki runs for president?
So what I will say is that it is both like cathartic slash a little triggering for people.
Because it happened before 2016.
It was written in June to August 2016. It was a 4-issue series, and there was very obvious commentary on here's like a chaotic, quote unquote, evil candidate entering the race for president. And you have this intrepid sort of like reporter character who is the main character trying to get Loki essentially like busted or off the campaign trail. But essentially everything she does, the opposite effect happens, and it only emboldens his campaign more. So I really encourage people to check it out if they feel like, understandably so, it doesn't bring back, you know, abhorrent, terrible memories from, you know, nearly 5 years ago. But I think it's a really good, only 4 issues. It's by Langdon Foss and Paul McCaffrey. And I think it's a fun look at also Loki, the character, with this idea of like he is consistently playing 4D chess up until the last panel of the very last issue of, you know, did he mean for things to happen? Was this all a big game in his mind? Which is contrasts very nicely to like the way Loki sees himself. We saw it in this episode too with his big plan. But even like you said, President Loki, it's one of the funniest scenes I've seen in the MCU of like, yes, of course, the Loki's going to betray him. And then, of course, all the Lokis are going to betray their leader as well. It's just this fantastic thought experiment of if you got a bunch of Lokis together, of course, this is what's going to happen.
So he's like been elected president of the Lokis here in the Void.
I would imagine
a certain group of Lokis is what it looks like. A lot of them were wearing Vote Loki pins.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the one with but these are also like, I thought it was an interesting choice of restraint to have Tom Hiddleston play President Loki, and that's it, right? Like, old bicycle handlebars Loki is still a random guy. Yep. Multicolored hat Loki is a girl. Like, they're giving roles to everyone else, including the main 3/4 that we're going to get into. I just found it interesting because you could very much go into a room of 20 Tom Hiddlestons, which would make Tumblr go crazy, I'm sure. But I think robs the opportunity for some of these other really rich performers to come in and, like, give their own take on a type of Loki.
Yeah, it was really, really funny to see just so many different versions of the character. And I think, you know, an underrated piece of what Loki is doing is this is helping to pave the way for the fact that, like, we thought that maybe Evan Peters as Quicksilver was going to do this in WandaVision, but they had a different thing in mind for that.
Ooh, imagine Ralph Boner Loki.
Yeah, I don't want to. I'm going to stop imagining that right now. But I think, like, you know, we know that there are, or at least it is heavily rumored to the point of being, you know, like, this is happening. The Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man seem like very likely bets to show up in the next Spider-Man movie. How do you have different versions of Peter Parker? Why aren't they all Tom Holland? And so the fact that we're getting like all of these different looking loci, I think like, I feel like Kevin, like this also like one of the underrated things it's doing. It's like, it's potentially opening the door someday for like a totally different actor to step in and play Iron Man for instance.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how far they'd go in that end of it. I think for the main quote unquote MCU, they might stick with the legacy aspect, which I think might like work a little bit better because like there's so much potential with like, you know, Riri and stuff like that to take over that role, or even, you know, Iron Lad, really, the kid from Iron Man 3 who actually appears in beyond what we saw in Endgame, apparently, as I've recently discovered. He does actually make an appearance, I think, in continuity in Avengers campus in Disney.
Oh, really?
Yep. So I found that out recently.
They got Spider-Man to appear. No, actually, that was Avengers 2 kid, right?
That's Avengers 2 kid.
Yeah, that's Avengers 2 kid.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing.
But yeah, but Spider-Man does appear. I mean, he is straight up part of the ride. But so, like, you have a lot of stuff we can play with here in the future, and I really like it. What I also really love, I have to call this out before we even get to it, because I haven't stopped thinking about it when he first showed up, and to have the story arc they did. Richard E. Grant as classic Loki was so goddamn good. It's not even like, I just, it was awesome. Like, in the costume, you know, was such a big thing when we saw him. That actor's incredible. And how he portrayed this character was wonderful and beautiful and amazing. But what I really, really loved, and I have to call this out, is that story-wise, you have that moment where, and this is like the expectation versus like payoff versus like, is it, you know, it just because if you guess something, is it then diminished if you knew that? Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great example of how to do it properly. Because you have this moment where you know that Sylvie and our main Loki are going to try and enchant, you know, Eliath, and you're like, okay, the other Loki's probably going to come back to like save the day. That's the standard. That's always happened, right? But not all of them do. The only one that came back was the Richard E. Grant one, was classic Loki. And the reason he's the one that came back is because, as he establishes, he lived everything we saw. This is a Loki that got to Endgame, died, and then went into seclusion because, like, he, you know, didn't want to, like, break the rules forever, then missed his brother and left. This is a Loki that went through the character journey we all experienced and saw. So him coming back at the end and doing that awesome moment, like, that was, I wrote down, like, that's dope. Like, when he comes back and raises Asgard, it's so cool. But story-wise, of course he's the one that had to come back. And I love that. That's taking expectation, doing something that could feel cliche, but with a story reason to make it powerful. And that's how you do that stuff. Like, people talk about, like, just because you're able to guess something doesn't mean that it's, like, not good anymore. And I'm like, well, sometimes, yes. Like, for me, the Timekeepers thus far in that episode, that reveal wasn't anything big because it wasn't an interesting story point in the way that something like this was. Like, it was a story point, but not like this. Not in the way that this wrapped up, I think, in a beautiful moment.
So to speak. Yeah, what I really love about classic Loki as well is that it feels like, for the first time, there's this idea of branching timelines. As much as I love all the different Lokis, I can't look at Tom Hiddleston and Alligator Loki and be like, all right, it was very clear that there's a junction point in the timeline where Loki was an alligator. Right. You know, it's very clear that we're representing the multiverse here, which is a reason why the Timekeepers or whomever, Reed Richards, is trying to keep the lockdown on everything, because the multiverse is getting out of control. This feels a little bit different, in that even different from Sylvie, right, who is of a different gender and clearly was living a different life as you know, Loki proper. This was, okay, I'm from a similar enough universe as you, but there's this one critical junction point where I do something completely differently. It's almost like a little bit what if-y from that perspective, right? Of like, okay, what if this one thing changed? Who would you become as a result? And I agree. I love Richard E. Grant as classic Loki. He rocks the crap out of that ectoplasm, you know, green, sickening green and yellow costume. It almost reminds me of like Frasier Loki. Just like very old and over it to a certain extent. But what I also love about it too is it deepens this idea of the Lokis all having different magical powers. You know, we're all D&D people, and it really feels like Loki proper is conjuring magic, Sylvie is enchantment magic, and classic Loki is illusory magic, right? That's his big thing is, oh, I escaped Thanos because I put a body double in and disguised myself as a pile of garbage. And to your point, Kevin, he basically creates an illusory Asgard at the end, too. So that's another fun thing to explore. If we do end up in a season two and we get even more Lokis showing up, it's this idea of, okay, we have all these Lokis with different power sets, and could this story be Loki becoming a Siler or a Peter Petrelli type? And
don't
like,
do that.
Learning
do that.
A little bit, well, not hopefully a lot better, but like learning a little bit from all the other variants and eventually becoming like the all-powerful Loki that he's claimed himself to be after all these years.
Yeah. I think a valid question. I think that this idea of like, what is he taking from all these different shades of himself is why I still feel like there is another card that has to flip. Loki has to confront the worst of himself. He still needs to see what that looks like. He has not really gotten under the hood of that in this series. I don't feel like they have leaned really hard into Loki, the antihero, and have moved away from the fact that this dude would have been the conqueror of Earth. And I know it's a different conqueror that a lot of people have on their mind in terms of the comic book fans. Kang the Conqueror, he of so many Marvel time travel stories, he who we know shall be showing up at some point in a Marvel movie as played by Jonathan Majors. I think that there's a lot of hope and perhaps even some expectation that he is going to be a central figure in the finale. I think we should talk that stuff through, because I've been banging the drum of, I think Endgame bad guy here has got to be a version of Loki. And I still feel that way, though I feel like you could have it where he is like, much as it was in the original Avengers movie, Loki is playing second banana to someone who's off screen and deadlier in Thanos. Like, I think something like that could be in play here with Kang the Conqueror. But I don't know, Kevin, you've been wanting to talk about this for a bit, I'm sure. Let's get into, like, is this episode with like all of the different Easter eggs, there's a lot of these characters from Renslayer to Eliath, these are all in the orbit of Kang from the comic books, who is this, you know, huge time travel antagonist. Is that where you think we are going? Do you think that it's a misdirect? Where are you at with all of this?
I mean, it's complicated, right? Like, at this point, just because of what's come before, I don't expect Kang the Conqueror to be showing up necessarily. Is it a misdirect? Sort of. Is it a better misdirect than what they did in WandaVision? 1,000,000,000%. Because in WandaVision, like, those are specific choices in which they're putting Evan Peters in a role to be... like, there's so much there that they did to misdirect in a way that I think was misleading to the audience, versus this, where their characters, if you know the comics specifically, if you know the references, you can connect it back to this character. And this character can still exist and connect sort of back to all this stuff, but not be the one who shows up at the end. I think that's fine. I think that's how that could work. He could show up and you could have it all tied together, but it's not necessary in this particular occasion. It's not, they're not promising Kang the Conqueror. The Evan Peters thing is like, they were trying to want to make us think they were promising. There's a lot of manipulation there I just didn't like. This isn't that to me. This is, you kind of have to have a much deeper comic book lore to know what's going on. But that all said, I mentioned this, you know, when you first brought it up, Josh, that I don't like the idea that it's Loki behind it all at the end of the day. I think after this episode, it's leaning more towards you being correct again with that, but I still don't really like it. I just don't like that idea for the character, I guess, and like that placement for it and what possible reasoning maybe. There's just a lot there that I'm sure they would explain, but it doesn't feel right to me. And it doesn't mean that's not going to happen. It's just, for me, from a perspective, I just don't like it. The only acceptable way that I would be like, this is great, is if it's Matt Damon. In which case, I would be like, this is great.
That's so
funny. I would be like, if it's Matt Damon who played fake Loki in the Asgard scene and Thor Ragnarok, the fact that they got him to do that and it's Matt Damon on a TV show. Yeah, right? Like, this is like when Matt Damon showed up on like Friends and stuff. It's just beautiful, wonderful, wonderful moment. It would make me laugh a lot, and it would be the only acceptable outcome for me that I would be like mostly okay with. Otherwise, it's just, I mean, I know what you're saying, right? The worst version of Loki, but it's just so crazy to me to think the worst version of Loki founded a time travel organization in which it just tries to erase things from the time. There's a lot there that doesn't fit into that's the worst version of Loki.
So like,
that's a version of Loki they shoved into the hole to make it fit.
If I'm shot calling, and if I'm thinking that like the finale has to have some Loki confronting a version of Loki, is that I do think it would be this thing where, in the same way that Loki in Avengers like teamed up with Thanos and said, I will bring you Earth, basically. Like, let me have Earth. I'll bring you the stones. I'll get you powered up. We'll be in league with one another. I can imagine a version of Loki doing that with all of time and like bowing to some extent to Kang the Conqueror, who has these things set up, who is being set up as like a next Thanos or somebody who is of at least great importance as an antagonist moving forward. I don't think it would be like Loki's huge single-handed master plan to create the TVA. I think it would be something that would be like really in line with the Loki that we have seen so far. And the Loki that we have seen so far is somebody who almost always, if not always, fails when trying to like execute a plan of this vision. And I think is is a, like a version like this would be like kind of like a shadow of the Loki that we've been following throughout this show, who started this journey in a very similar way. Like, this is the Loki fresh off of the Battle of New York in Avengers. This is the Loki who did make that terrible deal with Thanos. So for him to like then be able to go up against a version of himself that is like made a similar deal with the devil, as it were. That's kind of where my head is at as far as.
And I would like that. I would like that quite a bit, actually. Like, if that's the direction to go in, I'm all for it. And you know, again, that's exactly what it could be. We don't know until it happens. I will like to put the faith that that is what would happen. That said, my personal POV after WandaVision and Falcon is like, I don't know if they sometimes pull the cleverness out all the way on the TV stuff. If there's a Marvel film, bet I'd believe it. But I don't know. The TV stuff hasn't really sold me. But I'll be happy to see that. Like, I'll be happy to see like that is what's going on. And I'll be like, great, I'm ecstatic. You know, this is my favorite now, you know?
That's my prediction on the board. Mike Bloom, where are you at?
Allow me to offer a third perspective, which will be fitting, I think, given my thoughts on it. So first, I agree actually with both of your arguments from that perspective. I kind of would be disappointed if it was Kang, not from like I don't want to see Kang right now, but just, you know, the points that have been made is that this is a story about Loki. It seems to be pretty self-inclusive. Yes, there are other references to stuff in the MCU timeline, but it's not necessarily like Falcon and the Winter Soldier or WandaVision, where it's like a direct sequel to how these characters' journeys end. This seems to be a bit more self-containing. And so I think having this Jonathan Majors feet kicked up on the table coming to be like, hello, nice to meet you. I'm the one who's been behind it the entire time. Right. I'm important now. Please enjoy me for the next several years would just be so out of nowhere. It would feel like there is no sort of building into that, that it was, you know what it would feel like? It would feel like a Final Fantasy game, Josh. You know this firsthand, that oftentimes it's like, well, actually, it's not this person we've been seeing all along.
It's not Golbez. It's Zemus.
Yeah, but
actually, it's not Zemus. It's Zeromus. Twist within the twist.
Right. It's this idea of, it actually hasn't been this person you've been dealing with all along. It's actually this like omniscient big figure that is actually the final boss of this. And it doesn't work in games like that for me. And it doesn't work here for me, too, when serialization is key. Now, when it comes to the Loki side of things, I think it'd be a tricky needle to thread. I agree with it from a thematic perspective, but I feel like we have hit such a peak on this idea of multiple Lokis, multiple timelines in this episode, that I think for me it would be a little tough to deliver on, okay, but this is the final one. You know, this is the one who's behind
it
all.
It's the final Loki.
Yeah. Crocodile Rock comes back. You know, that I think that would be tough to pull off. I think you'd have to get, like, either Hiddleston doing another great job, or like, I mean, it would have been interesting if President Loki was the final boss in a way, you know, that could have been interesting. What I'm going to suggest is a third option, third party candidate, again, going back to vote Loki, that's a little off the table, because I think some people caught a screen cap of, as you know, Eliath was doing what he does and taking over, ravaging the land. There was a shot of a rock formation that showed three obscured faces. I think despite the Android's Hall of Presidents shenanigans that happened last episode, I think there's still a chance the Living Tribunal is involved. And so I wouldn't be completely surprised if we got that next episode. I think that would be a good job of like middle ground of, it's not completely out of nowhere. We got introduced to the Timekeepers, this idea of three. I think it's in line relatively with the mythos we've built up so far, but I think it's also far enough removed from it's just another Loki idea that it is still sort of like this weird omniscient idea, and then Loki's probably gonna, and Sylvie will probably kill them, and everything goes haywire after that.
I think that I should at this point be the guy on the podcast who turns to Kevin and says, Kevin, can you tell us who Kang the Conqueror is and who is the Living Tribunal? Because there are definitely people who like just need the recaps, because this is like the nerdy deep dive stuff. that a lot of like the super nerdy Marvel fan type commentary is circling around right now. And there are people who don't care about the comics and just care about the shows and have no idea what these things are and why we should care about them.
Yeah, so, boy, oh boy. So Kang the Conqueror is essentially best described as a time-traveling villain who basically wants to, I guess, conquer the universe is the best way to put it. He does a lot of time shenanigans, and he had this like city, which like Chronopolis or something like that. That he lived in which he also like conquers various points of cities in time. And one of the cities, and this is a connection to Ravonna, it was her city because he wanted to get her hand in marriage, and she didn't like wasn't into him, but then like falls in. It's this whole other like story there. The best way to describe that is essentially like a time traveling supervillain is who Kang the Conqueror is. As for the Living Tribunal, oh boy, the Living Tribunal is often considered to be like the most powerful being within the Marvel universe in that it is the entity that I think it's like houses and spawns and shapes literally the entirety of the Marvel universe, not just the 616, but everything that encompasses it. He's like the embodiment of the universe, if I'm not mistaken, because there's been a couple of things that mess with that as well. But it's this creature that's supposed to be like essentially the most powerful being in existence because it is the universe. That said, do I think? I mean, I caught the statue, but I was just like, it'd be wild to bring in something like the Living Tribunal at this point. And I feel like to me, we referenced it. I feel like this is going Wizard of Oz. Like, I feel like this is, you know, it probably will be a Loki or something as Josh is predicting, but there's been so many Wizard of Oz references from the beginning when the moment walked into the throne room in the last episode, it was just like, okay, that's, you know, like the Wizard of Oz moment to walking towards Emerald City that Josh referenced. I think that's going to be it. And who it's going to be in there is not going to be like something as big as Living Tribunal or Kang the Conqueror. I think it's going to be more like not a dude from Kansas, you know, like Oz was, but something close to that. Like, and it is possibly just all Loki who's like fumbling around, you know, in a like weird situation he got himself into or something like that. I think maybe that's where it ends up, you know. I think that's a high possibility.
Yeah, of like, and like reaching the end of the road and getting no answers almost.
In a way, right? Like the answer that they're looking for, like they're going there to kill this dude who is like responsible for all this stuff, but instead it's a guy who's completely out of his depth and has no idea what he's doing, running a function on something that like, because Oz didn't create the Emerald City, right? Like he just kind of like scammed his way into various other stuff.
He landed there in a balloon and they're like, oh, you must be, you know, magical. I think to that point, it would be really thematic with the idea of this series, which is like, if WandaVision was the mystery box, Loki is sort of like packing up mystery boxes and putting them away, and that you have all these big questions that need to be answered, but none of the answers are what you think it is, right? You know, what's the TVA? Well, it's actually a bunch of variants that were hired to staff this company. Who are the timekeepers? Well, actually, they're robots. They're all puppets for a larger power. So what I find so interesting about this show is that it really is not hitting a series of dead ends, but I think seeking answers to questions and realizing those answers are nowhere what you thought they were, and so you keep digging. Right, that was Sylvie's entire MO this episode was, all right, tell me everything you know. Ravonna gives her everything she knows. She's like, I don't believe you. There's got to be something more. Let me keep digging. Let me keep digging is basically like the motto of Loki at this point. And I think that would be a fun line of it, too, of, okay, we thought that this would be the thing that would provide answers. But no, it's some guy named Joe who's just pulling a bunch of levers behind the scenes and has access to the multiverse at large. That would be, I think, very fitting with this idea of when you think there's this big mystical idea of meaning that's the answer to every question. No, it's usually coincidental and, you know, run by the whims of flawed humans.
Yeah. There's a lot of possibilities on the table. It's a good thing that we will get at least the show's resolution to these things just a week from now. At least for a season. Again, there's the rumor persists that there will be a Loki season two. Another thing I wanted to ask about, because Kevin, you had mentioned like, so the Richard E. Grant classic Loki is like the extension of the Loki we knew. Like that's the guy who went through Ragnarok. That's the guy who got face-to-face with Thanos in Infinity War, except according to his version of events, he created an illusion so lifelike that Thanos couldn't even recognize it, and instead he turned himself into an inanimate object.
A pile of scraps.
Yeah, with a pile of scraps! And so he, like a bird, floated off into space and flew away and went to the Lonely Planet and not the Travel Guide. Well, and
can I speak briefly on Phase 1 villains for a second? Did you all notice when B-15 said Sylvie wants it? You know, Ravonna wants it, but Sylvie needs it.
Yeah.
It's a big Emil Blonsky callback for the second week
that.
In a row.
I need that. But my question is, so he put himself into, like, he was an inanimate object, and then he drifted away. So Loki, this version, survived Infinity War. Is there a chance on the board that this show...
This is our Loki? This is the OG Loki?
But that we will return to our Loki, that the Ragnarok Loki, that the one who we thought was killed in Infinity War is actually still alive, and the classic Loki storyline is pointing to the possibility that Ragnarok Loki is still out there.
Right, that's what I meant. That's what I meant by OG Loki, is that the possibility that Richard E. Grant is that Loki. Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly possible. It certainly sets that up. It certainly sets up an interesting end for this character. Now, things get wonky in the sense of, like, does that, like, that character can't leave because then it breaks his timeline or whatever.
If the TVA is still intact.
The TVA is still intact, an alternate theory could be that Richard E. Grant is actually this Loki that we're looking at right now. That something happens with this Loki and he gets inserted back into the timeline and it, like, resets itself or something. But he remembers what he told himself, in that he was able to create an illusion so powerful that he was able to, trick Thanos. Because remember, this Loki is also realizing he's way more powerful than he thought he was. And so seeing himself with all these various abilities, he might be able to pull off something very similar. Now, that said, is it going to be directly the same Richard E. Grant one? Probably not. But I think this is a way that this Loki can get shot back into his timeline and actually make it out. But again, that's timey-wimey shenanigans, wibbly-wobbly stuff that we probably won't know or see within this, because that's a future that may not be written yet. The future is interesting here, because it like, what the next episode is going to be, I presume, is a dual confrontation where we're going to have Owen Wilson confront Ravonna and the TVA, and you're going to have Sylvie and Loki confront whoever the quote-unquote timekeepers or people are, be it the Living Tribunal, be it the Wizard of Oz, or be it Kang the Conqueror. Either way, I'm curious about, like, what the ultimate endgame of this is going to be. We keep talking about the disillusionment of the TVA, which I guess is possible, but then what does it mean, right? Like,
it means the multiverse of madness is what it means,
right? But then, like, isn't that weird though? Consider the idea that you go through this entire thing where the idea is to bring down the TVA so you can get rid of this sacred timeline, so you can insert free will back into people again, right? Because the idea is that the TVA, there is no free will, and there's all this other stuff. And then at the end of the day, they do all that, and what happens? They break the universe, meaning that what they did was technically wrong, and they shouldn't have done that to begin with, because it caused the universe to collapse and go into pandemonium, or quantum manium, if you will. So, like, you're left with a message where it's just like, okay, so then the sacred timeline was the right approach? Like, where are we here?
If we end this series on a mixed message, wouldn't it be 3-for-3 in terms of Disney Plus series?
I think
that actually the more interesting variant in terms of longevity of the MCU Loki characters is not with classic Loki. I think we got to talk about Prince Siska. We got to talk about Kid Loki, because, again, we're not assembling Young Avengers, but we have introduced so many Young Avengers-esque characters. Mm-hmm. And then, correct me if I'm wrong here, I do believe Kid Loki was a Young Avenger for a short portion of time.
That is correct.
Of course. Jack Veal. And we were like, oh, I hope that kid doesn't suck. He didn't. He was great.
He really liked
him. And, like, his whole thing, like, I killed my Thor. Wow, that's heavy. That's a lot to take with you.
Yeah. I mean, it's great, though, right? Like, there's so much story in just that statement alone. But, like, how did that happen? And, like, how has that affected him to this point? Because you have, like, this really interesting version of Loki. What to my backing up point from previous that I think is reflected here, and again, my one gripe with this episode, and is a gripe, I think, with the show, is that I love the variations of the Lokis we saw because they all felt like Lokis, and they keep doing this thing now where it's just like, Sylvie isn't like us. She's different, I guess. And through that, there's again this love story. I really, really hate the love story, like immensely so.
Still.
Yeah, I just don't. Well, for so many reasons. One, again, about the like the same thing I mentioned about you're introducing a character who is bisexual, but the first person that we're seeing them with is a female character is just like, okay, what a cop out. And two, again, like the character doesn't act like him. It's such a different version of him that he might as well just be falling in love with someone else versus if he fell in love with, like, I mean, you know, Crocodile Loki is obviously the stretch, but like the idea of someone who is more in line with himself fits the idea of the selfishness of Loki. And maybe you're like, oh, well, character growth, he's falling in love with a better version of himself. And it's like, is it? Like, I mean, that this is, a debatable question. Also, because the idea of inserting a love story is such one of those mandates. Like, it just is a mandate, you know, that he's just like, well, you're doing a story. You gotta have a love story involved. Why else are people gonna care about it? And I'm just tired of that, like, being the reason why things have to happen. I was thankful for, like, you know, the point of Frozen not being that it was, you know, love from
true
someone.
Love's kiss.
Exactly. Same thing with, like, Moana, no love story, because you don't need it. You don't need that journey all the time. It's not a necessity. It's a storytelling trick, that's for sure. Like, when you have a character that you want people to connect to, right? There's the old adage, save the cat, that the idea is, like, you want your viewers to connect to your protagonist in a way that makes them feel human and good. You have to have them doing something good. And the old thing is save the cat. You show them saving a cat, people are like, he's a good person.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other
save
tricks.
Save the cat, that's true.
Yeah. The other trick, though, is to have the character be loved. Someone loves the character, that means that they have to have worthiness of love. So your brain tricks itself into like attaching yourself to that character. Because if someone loves them, that means that there must be something good in them. So that's a storytelling trick. So like inserting this type of stuff in here, I feel like is a bit of a cop out storytelling trick to be like, see, our Loki is changing. And it's just like, yeah, sure. But again, I also saw that in, you know, the course of a decade of movies that earned that moment. So, like, the love story really, really bugs me and really is the part of this series that I really just do not like. And I don't think I'm ever going to change my mind.
You're just a very, you just don't love love, just generally.
I love love. I love love right? when done right. You know, like, give me a proper
love story. Say, you don't want
happiness for anyone,
why.
Kevin.
Kevin can't be covering YA fiction and not love love.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
that's
exactly.
The core conceit.
Or no, as we like to call it, yeah, fiction.
What I will say is I am probably most high on the Loki Sylvie stuff after this episode. I actually really liked the scene of the two of them sitting on the hilltop, channeling some wet hot American summer, like, oh, I'm cold here, let me put this blanket
here have my illusory flannel. I'm gonna need that back. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, again, that would be very Loki-esque, right? I'm like, hey, Sylvie, can you actually give that back now? I'm feeling cold. I think it was a really nice scene because I think it was a way to stop down and do things. I actually, maybe I sort of like disagree with the general consensus on how this show is slow. I really don't think it is.
Last week have a comment about the pacing issues of
right,
Loki?
The pacing issues is that like it's not that it's slow. It's just that things are timed out in an odd way. I still believe that the ending of episode 3, I'm still confused why the beginning of episode 4 wasn't the end of episode 3.
Right.
Right. Like, I think it's a much stronger ending to have the TVA come in and take Sylvie after that entire adventure together than just, oh, well, we're boned. See you next week.
And to that point, I thought that this episode was the best episode of the series so far, but I thought the ending was slight.
Agreed. They should have ended with the reveal, right? Like a big moment that would make sense. Every episode ends in a very odd point. Which is what I think I agree with Mike about the pacing issues. But Mike, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
The scene that you're talking about, right? The stop down moment between these two characters. Does it change if they're just two people who are close and friends and allied in a way that has like a bond versus, oh, they're in love with each other?
Yeah. So that's the interesting point is that I think, I mean, they're sort of going back to the mode of dancing around each other, right? They haven't really had the opportunity since that time on that moon, almost said planet, that's no moon, to sort of talk through that moment they had, that Nexus event. So they have that awkward time where they're like, well, Mobius said that was a Nexus event. That's weird, right? I do like the ability at least to show Hiddleston and Sophia DiMartino acting a little, like, juvenile, in that it really does seem like, you know, when you had that crush on that person in high school and they're like, we're sort of playing chicken, waiting to say who likes who first, but for the moment we're just going to sort of play coy with one another. I did enjoy that mirroring. Maybe that's why I enjoyed this scene, is because I think this was one of those scenes where it felt most like these two characters were versions of one another. Where I have a little bit of trepidation is how we end the scene, right, with Sylvie saying, you're not going to stab me in the back, are you? And Loki says, you know, that person's gone. I've changed now, which, A, to your point, Kevin, show don't tell. B, are they setting something up? I know I did this with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Is Sylvie going to die in the finale next week? And will it be Loki's fault? A, Loki's fault?
I mean, I hope not. I think they have the potential to bring in like a major character, especially into the Thor mythos in a way. And again, this would be like one of those weird instances where if the only small things we get from this are like the characters that get introduced don't get bleeding over. But like, I mean, we have Monica Rambeau technically Monica Rambeau appeared somewhere else before she showed up. So like, God, if even the characters don't bleed over, they're just introduced in the series and that's it. They're done with. God, come on, Jesus Christ. Do a little bit more with these shows, guys. I hope that's not the case. I like this character. I like the actress. And that's my thing. Like my dislike of the love story has nothing to do with the actress or the character. That's again, because being in a romantic relationship shouldn't have to define your character.
Yeah.
But like that's what I like about the character are those parts of it, not like this idea of them together. And Mike, I would agree with you that it would have been a great contrast between what happened in the Nexus event and this awkward moment. If the episode in between never happened, if we never had Loki acting the way he did in the previous episode about, like, you know, caring about her so deeply and liking her and all that, as Mobius points out, then I think that would have been fine. But the way that the previous episode portrayed it was way much more than that. And that's my problem with it. That's my issue with some of the stuff that they're trying to do.
Yeah, I would say that I think this, much like a lot of the MCU, I think there's a lot of burgeoning performances that are maybe holding up some thinner relationships and storylines. I think, Kevin, I know you felt like you were a bit off on an island last week with your Ravonna Renslayer takes, but I completely agree. I think luckily, or maybe unluckily, we got a little bit more muddled stuff this week, right? We keep getting this back and forth projection of like, wait a minute, don't you want to find out stuff too? And now she's sort of torn between this idea of, I need stability, so I have to keep up the lie, but also I'm a little torn as well. What I was afraid of was what you vocalized last week, Kevin, and it really is a problem not only of the MCU, but Disney in general. You know, I'm glad you invoked Frozen as an example, because Disney, as of late, loves to do these third-act surprise villains, right? They love to say, oh, this person, you thought they were their friend, but actually, they were the biggest enemy all along, proving, you know, you can really don't judge a book by its cover. And the issue in doing that is that you have so much weight to pull in the final third of your movie by being like, all right, this character was the villain, so now they're suddenly completely evil. You know, Hans is this very warm, welcoming presence who helps, like, you know, keep Arendelle together in the absence of Anna and Elsa until he's revealed to be the villain, and now he wants to murder Anna, right? He wants to leave her in a room and let her freeze to death. Jenny Slate's character in Zootopia is another great example of, like, meek sheep to, like, plotting the murders of several people. It's flicking a switch, and I really don't like it. We see it in the MCU. We saw it with freaking Hayward back in WandaVision, right? Not to say that the dude was necessarily great, but until we got that reveal, he goes full villain. We've seen it before. I would say Quentin Beck, Mysterio, might be the most recent example of, you think he's a friendly guy, but when he's a villain, then he just goes completely OTT. I was very afraid we were going to go in that direction with Ravonna, and we still might, but I think, at least from my perspective, her character was more fleshed out in this episode, at least in showing a bit of her own internal confusion, more so than, wahahaha, I don't care about any of you variants, I'll defeat you with my pokey stick.
Right, and like, I agree there. I think this episode did a little bit better with it. And like, yeah, the switch, like, the switch flip can work if you do it, like, in the right way, if it makes sense. Like, I mean, look, the classic example is Usual Suspects, right? But like, that was very purposeful. That was like, we didn't get more from that character afterwards. It's the ending of the film. You know, like, you can have moments, and Hans actually does work for me, because specifically everything about Frozen was a commentary on typical Disney movies and the idea of like being super in love, even though you knew each other for like a day and a half. It's just like, you don't know this person. And I think that was the point. So like, that worked for me. But the other examples, I think, are solid, right? Like the idea of just, I'm evil twiddling my mustache thing. I just feel like, yeah, it needs to just be, you should be able to just like link it a little bit from line A to line B. And it's just, when it's such an about face, it's real difficult. But I think this worked, because at first I was like, oh, I guess she's good now. And even then, it's still muddled. I'm still very much just like, so what is she trying to do here? Like, I guess she's trying to find answers as well. And there could be the argument of, but then she says that, but then she's just like, I'm trying to bring stability to, there's just so much there. It would have been much better if they just kind of like implied the sense of like, both Ravana and Sylvie are trying to figure out the answers for the TVA, but they're going about it in different ways. Ravana is trying to take down the system from the inside, right, which is extremely difficult. And Sylvie's trying to take it out from the outside, which is also extremely difficult. If that was the parallel they're trying to do, and if that's the way that they fix it in this, I would have been a little more okay with it. Instead, I'm still just kind of like, so what is her deal? Give me more Miss Minutes. That's what I want. I'm not,
is Miss Minutes the bad
here.
Guy? Do we think Miss Minutes,
Jesus,
is going to
be the
bad guy? I mean, she is the TVA incarnate. So, like, isn't she kind of already the bad guy? Just the mascot of this evil organization?
I would love that so much.
They're going to get to the fortress at the end of the void, and Miss Minutes is there.
No, but it's going to be Tara Strong. Like, it's not going to be the cartoon character. It's going to be Tara Strong coming out.
I want it's going to be a hyper realistic version of the walking clock.
Yeah,
it's gonna be like this terrifying, uncanny
straight
valley
out of Return to Oz nightmare fuel.
Yes. Love it.
I think it's also tough because, look, our job is to come in here and give our own takes, but I would almost reserve judgment on Ravana as a character until we see it. Like, I think we very much are seeing this moment. There's a clear ending to this character. That there's going to be some sort of reveal. She's the Snape right now, and she's going to have her sort of moment where she's dying or whatever, and then we finally reveal what side she's on, you know, and what she's been feeling this entire time. For now, we're just sort of like being thrown back and forth. I certainly was. I was like, oh, okay, I guess she's working with Sylvie. They're going to get in this spaceship. Nope. No, never mind. She was going to betray her the entire time, which, I mean, this is a show that has certainly subverted my expectations when it comes to Disney Plus shows, which I think we can certainly talk about. So I guess it's par for the course in that regard, that you think we get a buddy up here between these two characters. But no, it was just a ruse the entire time to keep her talking so the Minutemen would come charging and poke her.
I love that scene, though, where that felt very Rick and Morty to me, where it's just like, you know the temporal ship that we have? Temporal ship. We're gonna get the temporal ship, and then you have the person just like, oh yeah, that sounds good. Can you open the files on that? It's taking a while. I'm looking for the files. Like, it just felt very Rick and Morty in like a stall tactic that was so hilariously ridiculous. And the bad guy immediately clocked, or the good guy in that case, immediately clocked it. I thought that was very, very funny and well done.
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm excited about that. I think we're in a cool place heading into the finale. I'm filled with questions. I know many of us are. I think, Mike, there is much wisdom in what you have said. I think we have to podcast about it. We got to fill an hour of time like talking about the show every week, but it is wisest to reserve some judgment. Let's see how these things pan out, especially with like Ravana. I want to know, is the final reveal of the bad guy, is that going to be okay? I'm nervous, I'm excited, I'm all of the things. Will they be able to effectively land the Loki and Sylvie thing in a way that doesn't cause Kevin's head to explode on camera? I hope so.
Tall order.
It's a tall order. It's a lot. We will see. Either of you, anything else that we haven't talked about from the episode that you feel like you want to bring up? Mike, you seem like you're chomping at the bit.
So here's a hot take that I want to get your guys' thoughts on, because there's been a lot of debate, right, about, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier was originally supposed to be the first show, but then due to COVID restraints, it got pushed back, and now WandaVision was the first show. I think after watching Loki, I would have liked this to be the first show.
Huh.
because I think one of my other disconnects with this series for quite some time is that I feel like WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, though they are distinctly different shows, they both had emotionality to it. They both had gravity to it. And I don't know, it's certainly not without its moments in Loki. We spoke about these character moments, but it's definitely not what the show is going for in comparison to those other two shows, right? Like, those other two shows, we had Elizabeth Olsen and Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan are putting in the best work of their careers. I love Tom Hiddleston. I don't know if he's putting in the best work of his career in Loki right now. There aren't necessarily those big, dramatic moments that we have seen in those other two shows. And I think part of the reason why I personally have been a bit disconnected until the past few episodes is because I kind of thought that's what these shows were going to be. And so I was like, okay, I'm looking for emotional investment. Where is my emotional investment in these characters? This is just not the show for that. And again, that speaks towards, I think, the self-contained nature. This is obviously not that serialized, and it's not picking up with these incredibly broken characters after an incredibly broken time. But I know for me, it took a while to really realize, like, okay, these shows are going to be different. It's just that these first two sort of had this connecting idea of grief, right, and compartmentalizing that. And so part of me wonders if I had personally experienced this series first. You know, when I thought that the MCU was coming to Disney Plus in a serialized format, this was what I was thinking about. I know I had sort of been beating the drum when WandaVision started of like, I love when the MCU goes weird and I want it to get weird. This show is weird. And I think it almost like satisfies my taste buds months after I had that yearning all the way back during WandaVision. And I just wonder from my own taste perspective, if I had started off watching this, A, would that sort of like immediately satiated my taste buds of this is a show that is weird throughout? And B, would that then sort of set up this idea of anything can happen in these Disney Plus MCU shows, less so these other two shows, which certainly push boundaries, but I think also both dealt with, they were capital D dramas, in my opinion. And I would not call Loki a capital D drama.
Yeah, I think one thing that happens there is like Loki comes first and maybe you feel like it scratches a certain weirdness itch, but then like you go into Wanda and Falcon and is it like maintaining that itch? I think, I think WandaVision was plenty weird. I think WandaVision like structurally was so strange. It becomes very Marvel-y. But like for weeks, it was just like it was the hotness because it was the first MCU thing in a long time, but also because it was kind of unlike anything. It was punchy, kicky, flippy Dick Van Dyke. You know, it was weird. It was weird. So I think Falcon being in the middle, I think like there is like that's not a particularly weird show. That's like a straight, you know, like bare knuckle thriller in like the Captain America, the Winter Soldier sense, I think. So I think like I don't know if that like level resets to a certain extent. It's an interesting proposition. I think we have, again, it's another one of those, like, let's see how it ends, because I think the ending, like, if it ends in, like, such a way that, like, you really need to know what's the next thing. Like, if this is, like, directly guiding us into Doctor Strange or even sooner potentially Spider-Man, right, then, like, this might be the perfect time for it rather than those first two that weren't, you know, necessarily... I know we catch a lot of flack. I want to give a shout out to Torby, who's like, WandaVision set things up. And Torby's totally right. Absolutely. Yeah. It did. It totally did.
I think WandaVision, I know it invokes the Mystery Box comparison to Lost. I think there's a little bit of that going on of like, we are sort of like overwashing a show based on the way things ended. To your point, Josh, when there was so much like interesting stuff going on in those first 4, 5, 6 weeks, I think we sort of label it with the way the final few weeks ended and that's really unfair for the show that brought so much quality strangeness.
I suppose this is where you two and I will always differ, because it is a Lost comparison. And sometimes if you build up a mystery box and I open the box and there's a pile of feces, I'm going to be upset no matter how much.
That might be Richard E. Grant disguised as a pile of feces.
Kevin, do you have anything that you want to like share with the listeners on your final post-show recaps appearance right now? Is there anything you'd like to say before you go?
4, 8, 15, 16, 22, 42.
yeah.
The placement would be interesting. And I, to Josh's point, though, the ending is gonna would inform a lot. Because what if it is Kang the Conqueror? What if Kang the Conqueror shows up? Imagine if this was the first show and they set up this idea of like, oh man, there's these hints leading towards something and it pays off and you're just like, holy crap. Then you get WandaVision? Oh boy. Like, I think the blowback would be even worse.
Yeah.
You, then they set a precedent for the idea that things will happen and things will show up. Which is why I think things won't happen and possibly show up here, because that's not what they've been doing. But, like, yeah, it's, I mean, again, like, even WandaVision setting up stuff, yes, kind of, we won't know how and what until it happens in the future. As always known, the future, we won't know until we see it. But certainly, there's elements that will play out. I'm sure there's elements here that'll play out. The placement of these shows is hard to say how it'll affect stuff. I think the hindsight is 20/20 on it, right? Like, we will never know unless we had experienced it at the time, and we can try to assume, but that first watch, that first viewing, how things shift and change, it's hard to really, really place it. So I don't know. I mean, after WandaVision and Falcon, I'm like, I was more in line to be prepared for what Loki was going to be. Like, it, you know, like I said, this is what I wish the show was to begin with. But I'm not like as upset that the show wasn't, because I hate to say this, because I'm just sort of like primed to be like semi disappointed when we walked in. So like, cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so odd to like have to say that, but like, that's the case in this one. Like, I'm glad it's here, because I was ready to be like, maybe it won't be what I want or what the trailers made it seem like.
I think it's interesting that we will go from like WandaVision to Falcon to Loki to Black Widow. Like, I feel like it's like it's ebbing like
weird
and flowing.
Weird action. Yeah,
that's interesting. On that note, we will be back next week. We will talk about the Loki finale. We will talk about Black Widow. I know a lot of people are making this their first return to movie theaters. I would do that if I wasn't going away on my trip, I think. I'm going to watch it on Disney Plus. I'm really, really excited to see a Marvel movie.
This is wild. This is the first time when was Far From Home? Was that like June or July?
It was 2019. July 2019.
Yeah, so we're coming up on like a full 2 years since it's happened, and like, this is, once that ball starts rolling, like, it is never going to stop now.
There's a lot coming. There's so many movies coming.
You know what? Please knock on wood. That's the case.
But it's incredibly exciting, and I think, you know, it's still this weird concept. I'm still not sure how to feel about it, but, you know, it's something different. I think that is sort of like the motto of Phase 4, right? It's like going for something different. We're going to continue some stories, but we're going to bring in a lot of new characters. I think this is bringing in Natasha Romanoff in an entirely new light. Understandably, a lot of praise for Florence Pugh, but Josh, I'm excited for your boy and mine. David Harbour is going to be making his MCU debut as Red Guardian. I'm so pumped for bearded Hopper, like, talking in a Russian accent, fitting in some armor, dealing with ScarJo. It's going to be incredibly fun. And so I have no idea what to expect from this film. The one thing I'll put out there, my one prediction, Taskmaster will be a woman behind the mask. That's my one prediction.
My one prediction is Kevin's going to find something about Black Widow that he hates.
I mean, I do that for everything, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm predicting it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think it's going to happen.
I predict Kevin will have the timing of this movie. Yeah, so yeah. There's that.
I predict Kevin will have a lot to say about Black Widow's hair.
That's not me. That's Robin.
That's
well,
Robin.
Listen, I don't think Robin will have a lot to say. No, it looks like we're full red. Like, we're not in Endgame, like, strawberry and vanilla puke hairstyle that she, ombre madness that she had during Endgame.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what goes down. I'm excited for it. We'll be back next week talking the Loki finale in the front half. Then we'll go into the Black Widow recap, or discussion is probably how it will go, in the second half of the podcast next week. Let's do plugs. Mike Bloom, do plugs.
Do plugs. Jump. I'm so happy to be here. You guys know I love talking MCU and getting to listen to you guys all season long. Again, like I said, I came around on this show, even though I really loved the premiere. Uh, I I really want to thank you guys for what you brought this entire season as well. It certainly got me more invested in the show, and especially with this episode, which, again, I loved so much. Like, exploring the void was really one of those moments from, like, fiction and pop culture that you're just like, this is a cool idea. Like, a ship and a sphinx and Thanos copters are just dropping in all over the place and getting consumed, gobbled up by a smoke monster. This is amazing. This is what I think of when I think about comic books being adapted to television, just the ridiculousness of it all. So I am so happy that I got to join you guys for, you know, a brief respite before I jump back into my pool and start drinking boxed wine. So you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type, of course, here on Pusher Recaps. Josh Wigler and I going down the hatch. Coming up this Friday is our coverage of Namaste. So we talk about, you know, getting used to another world as well, a different world. Maybe not a world where time ends, but certainly where the time travel ends in the 70s. So that's always a very fun talk. Josh has a little bit of a moment in the first five minutes that are very fun.
Yeah, I can't describe a thing that is very obvious to describe. It's a tough brain fart moment.
It's a tough moment for people who listen to the podcast. They're like, come on! Yeah. You know what it is.
And I knew it was happening, too. I was like, damn it, they're all laughing at me. They know.
They're all going to
laugh. They all know the answer, and I don't know it.
But we got it. We got there eventually.
Took
and that's
way
all that
too
matters.
Long.
So be sure
long.
To, of course, check that out, and we'll keep doing that. Of course, the Bloom Files on Post-Show Recaps. My wife, Angela Bloom, and I watching the X-Files. Me, for the first time, actually just watched an episode before we got on here where Garrett Dillahunt plays a guy who has a bunch of alien tendrils coming out of his mouth. So that was fun. I got to basically like describe Garrett Dillahunt and his career to Angela because I was like, that's Garrett Dillahunt. She's like, I don't know who that is. And I had I was like, come on, Raising Hope, Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead. Like, he's got
he's everywhere. Deadwood twice.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Garrett Dillahunt, he's been places and he was on the X-Files. So we'll talk about that. And then, like I mentioned before, reality TV is proliferating. It is as raucous as a Loki on Loki fight. Every week, Shane and Gus and I are covering Survivor South Africa, which is about a third of the way through its season. And we're actually talking on the night of the premiere of Big Brother 23. I'll be back doing podcasts about that with Liana Boris, doing some very silly things every few weeks or so. But majorly, I'll be covering that with Parade.com, be doing some interviews. And maybe if you're on Clubhouse, you might see my beautiful face doing some audio things related to Big Brother.
It is beautiful.
Well, thank you.
It is.
I
feel like this is boastful Mike talking.
Exactly. This is me with my giant fake Mjolnir and my like fur-lined hood or whatever Ariohota was wearing. So if you want to check all that out, also at a Mike Bloom type is where I, you know, schlep out all the plugs too. So be sure to check that out as well as I'm assuming some like random odds and ends here and about over the course of the next few weeks until whatever comes next.
Kevin, everything is sparkling. Twilight is happening in the Post-Show Recaps patron feed. It's going down.
So sparkly, so bright, so wonderful. That's right. Over for the patrons of Post-Show Recaps, Melissa Woodward and I, who previously known for Mighty Ducks Game Changers, have launched a brand new podcast called YA, in which we cover YA fiction. And we are kicking things off with the Twilight Saga. We have just done the first Twilight movie, so that should be hitting your feed soon. Boy, oh boy, was that a trip. It is a lengthy one. Got a lot to say about the Twilight Saga, Twilight proper.
Is that the movie where they play baseball, or is it the second one?
Oh, that's the movie where they play baseball. Yeah, they play baseball. A phenomenal scene. That's the scene I talk about where I'm like, this is the moments where I love Twilight, where they do this. It's so stupid. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
We really get into it, talk about the first movie, and we'll, of course, be covering the rest of them. New Moon, Eclipse, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Breaking Dawn Part 2, and ideally traveling from there into further reaches of YA fiction. So if you want to check that out, which you should, just sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. $5 level, you can sign up and get all that wonderful content. At the $10 level, you can join us on the Discord, where we talk about YA and all the other shows, along with playing D&D.
Yes, lots of great reasons to sign up. That $5 level gets you exclusive podcasts, which sometimes means early access to certain shows. This coming weekend, let me tease this, On Sunday, we will be dropping the first episode of a new main feed post-show recaps podcast a day early. So if you'd like to be cool and find out what that podcast is before the rest of the world, consider signing up. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. And if you're already a patron, get excited. I'm really excited for this show that we're going to do. It's very different from it's with somebody who I love podcasting with. And it's a very different show than the shows that we have podcasted about before. And I think it's going to be an incredibly wonderful time. And everyone should be pretty hyped about it.
What is this? Post Show Recaps Theater? You're giving out clues now for people to figure out
what
it is?
That's just what I'm throwing out there. There's a lot of joy in my heart as I'm anticipating the next several weeks of podcasting on this front. Okay, so many other things. We could just be here for a long time. We're going to wrap it up. We'll be back next week talking the Loki finale and Black Widow. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.